Vectis Radio on DAB.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight. We're doing this series of interviews with interesting people, and today we are talking to Michael Paler.
Hello, good morning, Michael. Maggie.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Good. I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
So those that don't know, Michael Paler is everywhere on the island, doing this, that and everything else. But I thought I'd ask him first, were you actually born here on the island?
No, I only moved here 8 years ago.
Right. Where were you born?
I was born in Hampden in Middlesex.
Right.
Just across the road from the palace where Henry lived.
Of course, yes. He didn't invite you in then?
No. Oh. He was too busy chopping people up.
Right. And you went to school there?
No, I didn't. I moved to Stevenage, which was a new town.
Right.
And that was in the 60s we went there because my dad got a job with BAE.
Mm-hmm.
Which was British Aerospace or yeah, whatever in those days. So we moved there because the councils all gave you houses with your jobs.
Right.
So I lived there until about 68. Went to school there, though, and had some really good teachers. And one of my teachers was the son of Peter Glaze.
Right.
Who did Cracker Jack.
Yes.
And the teacher told us when you first met us, if anyone says Cracker Jack, it's a slipper for you, because in those days you used to get the slipper.
You did, yes. So did you like school?
No.
No?
No. I did not enjoy my school life, because after I left Stevenage, I went off to Australia.
Right.
And I went to secondary school in Australia.
Yeah.
Which I did not like.
Because?
Because I was learning things I'd learned 2 years ago back here.
Right.
So I thought, I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
So I said to them, what age can I leave? And they said, 15. Well, here, it was 16 yeah, at the time. So they said, how old are you? I said, I'm 14 and a half. And they said, so you could leave shortly then? I said, yes, please. So I did.
Right.
And then I went off and started work.
What did you do?
I was a copy boy on a newspaper.
Oh, right.
In Sydney.
Yeah.
And that meant that I was sort of working in the editorial, the advertising, the women's pages and all sorts. Going to get copy, going to advertising agencies, going to the printers. So that was my ground in newspapers.
Yeah.
In those days, it was still the hot presses.
Yes.
Proper newspapers.
Yeah.
So that was my sort of background then. Then after a while, whilst I was working there, I was going upstairs with the photographers and they were teaching me to print black and white,
right,
and take photos. This was a rule.
Did you have to take photos first and then print black and white?
Yes. Yeah. There's none of this digital mess. So with that, Mark and Clem, the two photographers, said, we'll show you what to do after work, which they did. We got a new editor and he said to us, you've been learning how to do processing that. He said, would you like a cadetship, apprenticeship? I said, yes, please. He said, okay, then, we'll do it. So I did my apprenticeship. It should have been 4 years, but I did it in 2 years because they wanted me to go and do some features in Victoria and Australia of photographing livestock.
All right.
So I used to go round to studs and so forth from properties, photograph the livestock for the paper and for their advertising for the Sydney Royal Show and so forth.
So did the livestock pose for you? Or did you have to chase them around the field?
No, we used to do them in the paddock.
All right.
And then to pose a prize bull, you put a pallet down with straw over it, get him to stand on it so he's got a flat back, so he sells better.
Right.
So there was all sorts of tricks.
Right.
So I had a good time sort of working on the papers. Then Rupert Murdoch took it over and I said, no, not working for him.
No more. So when you were photographing the livestock, did you enjoy that or did you get chased around a field? Or?
Oh, got chased around the field, got bitten and all sorts.
Really?
Yes.
So was it just cows or was it sheep?
It was cows, sheep, poultry, anything that moved. Because it was a rural newspaper, yeah, it covered everything. So that's why Graham Bliss then found out about it and asked me to do the Royal Show on the island.
Right. Didn't have to bring your own cow, though?
No, there was plenty on the island.
So having decided you weren't going to do that anymore, what did you do next?
I came back to England for 6 weeks and then was offered a job in Queensland on the opposition newspaper.
Right.
So I went back to Brisbane then.
Yeah.
And worked for Queensland Country Life, the sister paper to the one that had taken over. So I went there. So then I travelled all around Queensland and Western Australia.
Was it cattle again?
It was cattle, women's pages, which was really good fun because no one wanted to do the women's pages because it was sort of going to sort of events.
Yeah.
So I went to Shirley Bassey's when she was opening some nightclub and they forgot to tell people the date. So I walked in and Shirley Bassey's there and she said, well, where is everybody? I said, I don't know. And she said, well, this is ridiculous. So the owner of the place said, I think I've sent her the wrong date. So we just sat there and had a chat. So that was good fun. But like I say,
and was she interesting?
She was very interesting. And, you know, of course, she had done Thunderball. It was Goldfinger, wasn't it?
Yes.
And all those sort of songs. So I had a long chat with her. That was interesting. Took her photo, went in the paper, and we didn't tell people it was the wrong day.
Oh, well, never mind, eh?
No, I just got her to cut the ribbon.
Yeah.
So opened up the place, and that was it. Yeah. And then, like I say, I was lucky. I made a lot of friends working on the newspapers who I'm still friends with now.
Yeah.
And I go to Australia every couple of years to see them.
Yeah.
And so we've sort of been friends for 50, 60 odd years.
Well done.
So friends mean a lot to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So then after Queensland Country Life, I went back to England for a while, came back here. Went back as a temp with £20 in my pocket, landed in Sydney for Helen's wedding, a friend of mine. I promised her I'd go back for the wedding. Went to her house on the Saturday. By the Monday, I went to the newspaper where I still have friends and that. And the company secretary said, tell him to come into the office. So I went across from the pub to the office and he said, do you want a job? He said, I'm now the boss of this newspaper. He said, I'll double your money if you want to start. I said,
and
okay.
You said no.
I said, okay, when do you want me to start?
Yep.
And someone said, well, there's a job on it that we can't cover at the moment. I said, well, give me the kit, car, I'll go and do it. So I got back to Australia on a Saturday and I was working by Monday.
Well, there you go.
So
can't
I've
be back,
been
can it?
Lucky.
Yeah, can't be bad, can it?
Falling into the right places.
Yeah. It's not just that, though. You must have been good at what you did. Otherwise, they wouldn't want you back, would they?
No, there was only a few of us who in Australia at the time who could actually do livestock photography.
Yeah.
Because what you had to do, as well as putting them on a pallet and so forth, you had to make the noises to get the cattle's ears up.
Right.
Because people wouldn't buy them if the ears were down.
Right.
They had to sort of be looking at you in a certain way.
So then, you're an interesting person, yes, with your ears up, yes.
Yes, I need your ears up. And then with horses, you had to place their legs in a certain way so it didn't look like they only have three legs.
Yeah.
Chickens, well, there's not a lot you could do with them.
Not much you can do with a chicken, no.
No. And vegetables.
They don't move much, do they?
No, but they put on these spectacular displays. And I even got collared back here to the new Covent Garden Soup Company held a competition for unusual fruit vegetables.
Yeah.
So they asked me to go to the Newbury show and photograph these unusual things and they paid me to do it. And I thought, this is silly money for sort of doing things that I'd always done.
That's not the point though, is it?
No.
If you're enjoying it, it doesn't matter, does it?
No matter what I do, I always enjoy myself. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can be positive, take people with you.
So when you were at school, did you ever think you would become a photographer on a newspaper?
Nope. I was looking to be a draftsman.
Oh, right.
Because I used to be really good at technical drawing. And I thought, right, okay. But of course, now it's all CAD and all these type of things.
Yes.
So a draftsman, that wouldn't have lasted.
No. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And after you've done that, what did you do next?
Oh, I came back here again, and then I found...
Were you on elastic, do you think, going backwards or forwards?
No, my air miles, I don't tell the Greens about this. I had sort of plenty of air miles over the years.
Yeah.
And then I came back, I went to work for the Royal Mail. Yep. I thought, I don't want a job where I'm working 20 hours a day, sort of photographing this, that and the other.
Yeah.
So I went on the post.
Yeah.
And this was in the 70s where it was, you actually did a job.
Yes.
And you met people and you got things done.
Yeah.
So I went there, did the 3 days training, which was good fun. I thought, this is so easy. So then I did every delivery in the town. Then I became a postman Pat, did the rural deliveries.
Did you have the cat?
I did not.
No.
No. We were not allowed cats.
No.
So with that, I spent time working with numerous postmen doing different deliveries. Then I was training them as well, taking them out. And in those days, we used to do job and knock. So as soon as you got rid of all the mail, you could finish.
Yeah.
And we were all very good at getting the job done. Whereas now, they sort of come around 3 times a week, if you're lucky.
Okay.
And then from there, I became a union official.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the 70s was a time where there were lots of strikes and so forth.
Yes.
So, because I was a union official, I used to go and have to do the negotiations. So that put me in a good stead for later life.
Yes.
And sort of dealing with obstropolous people and that.
There's quite a few of those.
There's quite a few of them about, but luckily I've had a good training in how to deal with them. So from there, I went on to do a bonus scheme for the postman. They asked, they said, can you save 2,000 hours in the office? So I redesigned the whole office. I spoke to all the postmen and said, right, if you want a bonus, this is what you've got to do. You've actually got to work. So I changed every delivery, every collection time. And it was a mechanised office, so I changed all the layout and everything. And I got the postman a £50 bonus a week. In the sort of 80s, that was good money.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So with that, the post office then, or Royal Mail, asked me to go and do this for Cambridge, Ely, the East Anglia. So I spent my time for 2 years travelling around East Anglia doing bonus schemes to get things up and industrial relations. And then they said to us, right, would you like to be a manager? I said, not particularly. And they said, well, we're starting this scheme because for a postman, you used to have to be a postman first, then a PhD, which is postman high grade.
Right.
Then a manager.
Right.
Well, they said, well, we're starting this scheme where a postman can go straight to a manager. I said, right, okay. So I said, okay, I'll try it. I didn't really want to do it, but I did it. So I had fun. They trained us at Cranfield, sort of one of their teaching methods. So that was fun for 2 weeks. Then they put me on the floor and I was getting people to do things that the other managers never managed to get done because I actually spoke to the people and got them to do the job. And told them that you want the bonus, you've got to put the work in.
Absolutely.
So I always found to take people with you to get things done,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot easier. So when I'd finished that, I did manage you for about 2 years, then went on to my rural deliveries again because I got fed up of being stuck inside.
Yes.
I've always liked being outside. And luckily, my delivery, rural delivery, I had one of the first, how can you put this? I delivered a summons.
Yes.
To a chap in his house. And it was his divorce papers.
Right.
He didn't know he was getting divorced.
Ah.
So his wife went into the toilet and he blasted a shotgun at her.
Oh.
The police came up to us. We did not have armed response units in these days. The local police came screaming into the village and they came looking for us and they said, what did you deliver to him? I said, just a recorded letter. Why? He said, well, he's tried to shoot his wife, but luckily she ducked down And
he missed.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, they said, right, you've got to give a statement. I said, for what? And he said, well, you're the one who delivered it. I said, yeah, but I'm not the one who committed the offence. So I thought the law was very strange even then.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We'll take a break now for some adverts. Okay. And we'll be back with you in a minute.
Vectis Radio on DAB.
Right, we're back now after the adverts, back here with Michael Paler. Yes. And you were saying about the jobs you've been doing and the gentleman who tried to shoot his wife.
Yes.
What happened after that? Did you actually get summoned to court?
I did. but he said that he was guilty, so I didn't have to attend.
Oh, good.
Yes, I thought, great.
So it was all your fault for delivering the summons?
It was all my fault for delivering the summons. But those days, we used to deliver daily.
Yes, yes. So what happened after that?
After that, I was then sort of doing deliveries. And one of the incidents I had, which my wife always reminds me about, is that, you remember the old clothes props?
Yes.
I delivered one to a house. And it was a Saturday. And I thought, I don't want to take this back to the office. And I thought, this will go through the letterbox. So I stuck it through the letterbox. Heard it drop. I thought, great. I got back into the office on Monday. Did you deliver a clothes prop? Yes, why? Well, they had to break into the house because it fell down behind the door and the steps. And I locked the people out of the house. So with that, I then went on to do the shorter working week.
Yes.
So I was poached to go around the country and do bits and pieces on that.
Yeah.
To bring the postman's hours from 45 down to 38 hours mm-hmm. a week, giving them more bonus. So that was sort of my background in Royal Mail.
Right.
Then I moved on to Streamline, where they took the mail off the trains.
Right.
And put it on the road.
Yeah.
So they gave me my HGV licence, which meant I was up and down all over the country, sort of Yorkshire one night, Bristol the next night. So I had a good trip around the country.
You did, yes.
Which then brought its own sort of incidents. I was coming down to Portsmouth, and as I came over the hill, there's an Arctic in the middle of the road with its door open. And I thought, why has he stopped there? It's just at Winchester as you come down the hill.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is crazy. So I pulled over to the hard shoulder, got out, and I thought, he's going to cause an accident. So I thought, I'll check first. And at the side of the road, I found a camper van upside down with two people in it.
Ooh.
And it was sort of about 18 inches crushed down.
Right.
So I crawled in, and the chap's hanging upside down. I said, right, what's your name? So he told me his name and that. I said, anyone else with you? He said, yeah, Marion, my wife. I said, where is she? He said, well, she was sitting next to me. Well, that was even less. So I put my hand in and I said, if you can hear me, Marilyn, just make a movement. And she did. I thought, great. So he said, we've just filled up. We're going to Spain. We've just filled up with propane gas. So they've got two canisters in the back.
Yeah.
So the police and fire brigade all turned up and they said, there's not enough room for us to get in there because you're in there. Can you just stay in there with them? So I said, yeah, no problem. So I stayed in there with these people. Then the fire brigade had sort of jacked it up a bit. They managed to get someone in. So I just got out, got back in my cabin unit, drove down to Portsmouth.
Why was the HGV there? Did you ever find out?
Yes. It was a Spanish driver. He'd hit them.
Oh.
Sent them over the road.
Right.
Because it all went to court on that. And, you know, he was done causing the accident. But the couple involved in the accident put a piece in the Winchester paper. They were looking for the driver who stopped to help them. Well, I didn't know anything about this.
Who might that have been?
Well, the postman down at Portsmouth, when I got in there, I was covered in blood in my overalls. And they said, what the hell have you been doing? I said, I just stopped at an accident. And they said, right, well, go and get cleaned up and we'll sort out the mail. And I said, yeah, all right then. So I did that. But of course, they saw that in the local papers that they were looking for me. So then it was a ridiculous sort of thing. Royal Mail then contacted me and said, you were involved. I said, yes. So they invited me to an awards night at the Dorchester.
Right.
Lorry Driver of the Year. So I thought, oh, I don't want this. And so I went to Budapest, on holiday with the wife and daughter. And it was the day, 7/7, the bombing. So we had trouble getting on the plane to get back. Or they changed the date of the award ceremony because I said I can't go because I'm going on holiday.
Yeah.
But they changed it to a date where I could go. So they hired me the tux and
so you
all
had
the bits.
To go, yeah.
Yeah, and put me up at the hotel and that. So I had to go to this. And then, of course, it was in the blimmin' papers and that. And I'm like, oh, I can't be doing with this. So I'd just get on with it. So from there, I went on for 13 years.
I take it you were given an award.
Yes, but I've just put that somewhere away. So.
All right.
Yeah, that's somewhere in a cupboard.
Okay.
Yeah. So after then, I went, like I said, I was at Streamline, which gave me 13 years there. So I did 32 years with Royal Mail. And at Streamline, they said, right, we've got 10 redundancies if everyone wants them. And I was 55. I said, yes, please. And he said, no, you're too young. So I said, what age have you got been? They said, 55. I said, well, I will be by the time the paperwork's done. They said, right, okay then. So I took redundancy at 55. And because I knew redundancy was most probably on the way, I'd started up my own company. So that's when the photography all came back into it.
Right.
Which meant that I was going all over the country and around the world doing photography whilst I was still working for Royal Mail.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, now I've finished. I can go off and do the rest of
it. Do your own thing.
Do my own thing, which I did do.
Yeah. Where did you go to do it?
I finished at Royal Mail on the Friday. I went off to Sydney to cover the Lions tour.
Oh, not Australia again.
Yes, it was the Lions tour. Yeah, so I went on the Lions tour to Australia when they actually, first time they'd won in 13 years.
Right.
And that was good fun because we were on the Sydney cricket ground pitch till 2 o'clock in the morning with the team because they just couldn't get over that they'd actually won it. So, and then that I left my laptop in my hotel room in Sydney. And when I got to the showground for the game, I thought, I've forgotten my laptop. It's still in my hotel room. So I thought, oh, no, I've got to go back and get it. So I left all my camera gear at the stadium, went back, got the laptop. Then, of course, I was coming out when all the supporters were going on the trains. And I had two Aussies standing there and everyone else was in the red shirts for the Lions. And I said, I think you look a bit outnumbered. And they said, yes, we feel that way. They said, but our son's playing. I said, is he? He said, yeah, he's playing in an exhibition game before the Lions game. I said, all right. I said, where is he from? So they told me where they were from. And I said, oh, I said, I know where that is. And they said, really? I said, yeah. I said, I've been there to photograph sheep. And he said, where did you work? I said, Country Life. He said, did you do the Sydney show in 72? I said, yeah. He said, prize ram? I said, yeah. He said, well, my dad had the prize ram. And your photo is at our homestead in the office.
A small world, isn't it?
Small world. And with that, they said to us, you know, can we get in touch with you? So I said, yeah. And they said, if you come back to us, come and see us. Well, I didn't because I'd end up flipping and seeing people I hadn't wanted to see all the time.
Right, yeah.
So I thought, right, no, I will now get on. So did the game. That was good. And then I came back here. Then I covered all of the premierships, the rugby sevens in Dubai, went to Atlanta with the women's team. So I've known loads of rugby players over the years. And what I've always done is give them a portfolio of photos from when they started to when they retired.
Right.
So I've met some really good characters and, you know, inspirational players who, Jason Robinson. Oh, Jason Robinson is an ambassador for children's charities. And
All right.
So I've got a lot of time for Jason. He came from up north and has
up
done. Up north, yes. I think it was Bradford or somewhere he played. But he was the only person to score a try in the World Cup.
Right.
In Sydney. So Jason and I have sort of known each other for years. And then in Dubai, I've been caught out a few times because the England Rugby, the RFU, England Rugby, has said, well, we're going to send out our media girls, but they'll be with you. Well, of course, going to the UAE, blonde young ladies stick out like a sore thumb.
They do, yeah.
So I ended up being a minder for the England women. So I had plenty of experiences of sort of going out into the desert to photograph sort of rugby games next to a camel racing track.
Yeah. No camels?
Yeah, they were on the racetrack next door.
Right.
They were warming up each morning.
They weren't playing rugby?
No, they can't do the tackle. They get the hump.
Dear.
So with that, I got told to go into Dubai by a taxi driver. And I thought, he's going the wrong way. So he said, no, I'm going the right way. I said, no, you're not. I've been doing this trip every sort of couple of days. You're going the wrong way. He said, oh, well, I'll turn off. So he turned off onto this desert track. And I thought, oh, my God, what's going on here? So he took me around this desert track and I thought, are we going to get back on the road? Because things were not too good in the Middle East at that time.
Yeah.
So I'm back on the road into Dubai. And I thought, right, okay. We got to the hotel and he said, oh, that's so many dib-dabs. I said, that's not the price. And he said, yes, it is. I said, no, you're the one who made the excursion. So that's, you know, the way it is. So I said, no, I'm not paying that. So I took my stuff out of the boot. And he said, well, I'm going to the police station. I said, it's there. It was next to the hotel. He said, I'm going to the police station. Tell them that you won't pay me. I said, you can. But the concierge from the hotel came out and said, what's going on? And they just told him, get lost.
Go away.
Go away. So he disappeared. And I thought, that was an interesting night going through the desert.
I bet, yeah.
And because he was sort of praying as well as we were going along, I thought, this does not bode well.
No.
But as you can see, I did get back.
You did get back, yes.
I did get back. And then I also got arrested in Dubai. Not Dubai, India, Bombay.
What were you doing to get arrested?
Mrs. Gandhi was the Prime Minister at the time.
Right.
And she did not like the press.
Okay.
And I was travelling back to London. I didn't have a camera. And in those days, you had to get off the plane, go into the terminal.
Yeah.
They looked at my passport and said, you're a press photographer. I said, yes. And he said, you've taken photos of it in India. You're not allowed to. I said, but I haven't got a camera. So I was put in a cell. So I spent 4 hours there.
For not having a camera.
For not having a camera and being a press photographer. And with that, we had to get the ambassador down to get me out. And he looked like Jimmy Edwards.
Oh, right.
And I thought, this is sort of quite surreal. So I then got back on the plane and British Airways put me in first class. They said, because the rest of the passengers are going to lynch you because they've been held here for 4 hours because the pilot refused to leave.
Ah, that was all your fault.
That was my fault again, yeah.
Oh, right.
So I get people shot. So I've had a mixture of sort of experiences over the years.
So we're going to take another break here now for some adverts and we'll be back in a minute.
Okie doke.
Vectis Radio on DAB.
Okay, so you've got back from India.
I got back
from India. Quite safely.
Quite safely.
And from there, what happened?
From there, I was carrying on with photographic assignments all over the world.
Yep.
But then I was covering the America's Cup in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
And I met a couple of island journalists.
Yeah.
And because the America's Cup, most of us were rugby photographers. There wasn't many sailing photographers there.
Right, yeah.
So we were enjoying ourselves and having a laugh. So one of my most famous pictures is of Kate and William with the Royal Emblem behind them on their boat going out to see the America's Cup.
Oh, right.
And that picture, because I've worked for agencies in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Russia, and that picture was used all over the world.
Oh, well done, you.
So I thought, right, okay. Oh, and I've won awards for photography as well in rugby.
There you are.
Yeah. I was the third in the world for world rugby in their competition. And I didn't even put the photo in.
Ah.
They just used it and gave me an award for it.
Well done, you.
So I thought, right, okay. And then, like I say, America's Cup brought me to the island because of the journalists that I met.
Yeah.
We moved here 8 years ago. And this has been a fantastic experience, sort of living on the island.
Yeah.
The community here is something else.
It is, isn't it?
And like I say, I've met so many different people. I was involved with COVID. And that got me an invite to Buckingham Palace.
How did you get involved with COVID? You didn't distribute it to everybody.
No, I'm not the one who brought it here. No, what happened there is that I was on the East Cowes Town Council and we had to set up a hub 2 weeks before it all kicked off. So the town clerk asked me, would you take it on? I said, yeah. And when I sort of looked at the other councillors, I thought, well, yeah, I will do it. So with that, I took on COVID, set up the hubs, and then it sort of spread around the island.
Yes.
I had 40 volunteers, were all fantastic, because we were going out delivering to people their meds, food.
Yes.
And then I met so many people during lockdown, because I was out every day, which was great, because everyone was being told to stay indoors.
Yes. You had to be different.
I had to be different. Like I say, I'm not one for being stuck inside. This morning is the longest I think I've been stuck inside for a while. So with that, I had one lady. I took her meds to her in a block of flats. And I said to her, are you okay? And she said, can you put my meds through the door? I said, well, they're a bit too large to put through the letterbox. And she said, no, I can take them in through the letterbox. I said, you can't, it's too big. So she says, hold on. So a litter picker came out with the tweezers on it.
Yeah.
She said, put them on this. I said, you've been held hostage by a Dalek. And she said, no, I just don't want to see anybody.
Fair enough.
So fair enough. And that's when I found out the power of the pharmacies. Because I had a chap who thought he was going to die. He contacted me. He'd run out of his meds. And these were ones that kept him alive.
Yeah.
I said, all right, leave it with me. So I went to the pharmacist and I said, look, what's happened with these meds? And he said, the doctor hasn't signed them off. He said, I can sign them off in this one instance.
Yeah.
So he gave me them. I went up to the bloke's house, knocked on the door, stood 12 feet away from the door, put the meds on the thing. He said, I didn't think I was going to see tomorrow. Thank you so much. And he burst into tears.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, there were so many sort of instances where things like that during COVID happened.
Yeah.
Then I was involved with the vaccines here at Riverside.
Yes.
And that used to be good fun because I used to like arguing with the non-vaxxers. I used to tell them that they wouldn't get into a pub if they didn't have their vaccine.
Right.
So I was sort of here from day one until it sort of finished.
Yeah.
And then the NHS kept giving me bits and pieces for doing it and that. So then I got involved with a few councils, been on a few councils and sort of done things. And then I've moved on to community action here.
Yeah.
And I'm still working with the community. So I'm still seeing people that, you know, sort of need just that little bit of help.
Yes.
But I've also been involved with youngsters as well. I used to do mock interviews. One of the schools asked me to do mock interviews for them. And I used to really enjoy that because they'd come in with their CV, put it down, and I had two kids who came in and their heads were down so low they were touching the desk. So I just put my head on the desk and spoke to them that way. And they have both gone on to really good jobs after speaking to them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what they wanted to do.
No.
One of them, I
said... But you don't at that age, do you?
Well, one of them had been doing some work in a garage for 2 years. So I said, have you asked them about becoming a mechanic? An apprenticeship? No. I said, right, when you go in on Saturday, ask them. They gave him an apprenticeship.
Good.
The other lad, he was a footballer for Newport. He said he wants to be a footballer. I said, no, you need something else to fall back on.
Absolutely.
So he said, what are you going to do? He said, well, I do a bit of carpentry with my granddad. I said, right, what about a carpenter? He said, okay, then I'll do a bit of carpentry. I met him at a trade fair a few years back. He's now restoring yachts.
Good for him.
So I thought those are two kids who really went on and sort of given the right direction, they can get going. Yeah. And like I say, I'm still dealing with all sorts of people who need a bit of a push occasionally.
So you really enjoy helping people then?
Yes. I think that's one of the benefits of the island is that there's a community so big. And the volunteers base on this island.
Oh, it's huge, isn't it?
Is massive. And I've volunteered at the Needles for National Heritage. I've volunteered for English Heritage, National Trust. The Airplane Museum. I've sort of done my volunteering bits.
Yeah.
But now I'm sort of preoccupied with doing sort of stuff in the community.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy.
So what stuff are you doing particularly?
Tea dances.
All right.
We set one up. It was the doctors, myself, one of Denise from the council, she's a facilities officer. We got a tea dance that is town hall. We just celebrated our first year. First session we had 80 people turn up.
All right.
Which was too many. But they all came dressed
in
a 40s style because we did it 40s, 50s and 60s. Yeah. Because looking at the demographics of the people, we thought if we take them into the 70s and 80s, they wouldn't know what's going on. So that has been a really big success.
Yeah.
And we're averaging about 60 now.
So do you dance or do you observe?
I'm the bouncer.
Oh, right.
Well... Some of them.
Your name's not on the list. You're not coming in.
Oh, they just let me in now. Well, the saying on this island is that if a tin of paint's opened, you'll be invited to it.
Right.
Yeah. But like I say, I enjoy it. And like I say, Vectis Radio as well. The work that you do for the community is outstanding.
We do what we can.
I know you do. But like I say, Vectis Radio, I've always got a lot of time for them. And Ronaldo and co, I send in people who I find who've got a story.
Yes.
So sort of get that up and going.
Yeah.
But no, like I say, I'm very happy.
Good. So are you doing photography for the sailing this year, the Cows Week, or?
Yes,
have
I normally do.
To do it, or?
Well, I have sort of brought a few things to the island, like the Great White Bite.
Yes.
That was
hugely successful.
Yeah, well, what happened was they contacted me and they said they were going to pick between Ryde, Cowes, and somewhere else. I forget the three places. And they said, could we meet you? They said, because we want to get this up and running. I said, yeah, no problem. So I went and met them and Red Funnel, because Red Funnel have been a good supporter of sort of events and that I've put on over the years.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, okay then. So took them round Cowes, showed them. They said, right, okay. So they've done two. The third one got rained off. It was an atrocious day. So they're looking at sort of bringing it back, but it's going to be earlier in the season.
Right.
Because it was always at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So they're going to try and bring it back to the early part.
We went to one at Northwood House, didn't
That's
we?
Where it was, yeah.
And it was brilliant. Yeah. It was a bit damp, but
yeah.
It was brilliant.
The harbour master told me off because people were coming across from Hamble and so forth, coming up to Northwood House to the Great White Bight. They were ringing up their friends and saying, sail over here. And the harbour master said, we've got enough boats for all these boats. It's too popular.
Yeah.
And I think there was about 3,000 to 5,000
yeah.
that went that year.
I thought it was very, very good.
It was. So, yes, there's sort of plenty of events that I've sort of liked to get involved with and people as well. Like I say, the people on this island are something else.
They are, aren't they? And how does your wife survive when you're out and about? And
I think that's
or is
why,
she pleased?
I think that's why we've stayed married for so long, because she doesn't see much of me.
I'm sure that's not right.
Well, no, she's always pleased to see me when I do return.
So have you got any advice for people who may be young, middle-aged, older, who want to change something in their life, change direction? Have you got any advice? What should they do, do you think?
Go forward. Just follow your dream.
Yeah.
There's always someone somewhere who's got the same vision as you.
Yeah.
Your job is to find that person.
Yeah.
And to get the funding or whatever to get it going.
And if you're not enjoying what you're doing?
Look for a change.
Yeah.
Look for a change.
Absolutely.
And like I say, there's plenty of opportunities on this island, and there's a lot of employers that want to employ people. But unfortunately, we've got a mindset after COVID of sort of people only want to work 4 days and want to have a mental health day on the fifth day.
Right.
Because they've worked 4 days and they need a day's rest.
Okay.
So, no. People need to sort of be able to look forward and actually do a full day's work.
Yes, and enjoy it.
Enjoy it, yeah. And there's plenty of jobs out there to enjoy.
Right. One final question.
Yes.
Do you have a favourite tune, song, track that we can play at the end of this interview?
Well, I don't know. It's rather a long track because I'm going to have it at my funeral.
Yeah.
And it's Blood, Sweat and Tears When I Die.
Okay.
That's about 4 minutes.
That's fine. That's not long. That's really interesting, Michael. Thank you so much
and
for doing
thank
this.
You for your time,
no,
Maggie.
It's a pleasure.
And good luck on your new show.
Thank you.
And I know people I've been telling them about it.
Oh, dear.
No, don't worry. But, no, it's good that you're all going dab as well.
No, thank you, Michael.
Okay, well, it's been good to see you both.
And you.
And Kelvin doing the nods.
Yes, thank you.
If you would like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.